Welcome to the Freshman 15, a film discussion podcast where we focus on the freshman works of 15 notable directors.
Here's what we do. Each episode, we talk about a different freshman film, what's good, what's bad, what themes and stylistics the director went on to use in later films, and what was kicked to the curb.
Also, we'll give you our opinion on whether the film still stands up, if it ever did, or if it's for completists only.
I'm Daniel Long. I grew up in Lancaster, which meant I had one of two options. It was either meth or movies.
And I'm Jeremy Baer. I'm probably the most authoritative film expert when it comes to freshman films in the American Southwest, at least California, Long Beach, West Long Beach, north of PCH. We usually get right into it, but I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about the fact that we have been blessed with listeners, lo and behold.
Oh, man, people are listening and they're giving us feedback.
It's great.
It's great.
Well, you don't know when you start something like this, if it's going to be your mom and no one else.
Right. It's fun here, in here, and it's hot, and we're talking, and You don't know if people are going to be listening at the other end.
No. I mean, you hope so. But you know what? Let me read a couple of listener comments. One from Diana said, I'm really enjoying listening to these. If only there were five a week, one for each day I'm at work.
Diana.
Isn't that sweet?
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
And here's Jen. She says, please say that there will be a Wes Anderson episode. Pretty please, she says.
I'm all for it. I think a Wes Anderson episode would be fantastic.
Fantastic.
Bottle Rocket.
Oh, man. I can't wait to talk about that.
Another one. I'm just going to assume these episodes. This is another quote. I'm just going to assume these episodes are in the works, and I shall continue anticipating George Lucas's THX-1138 and Charlie Kaufman's Synecdoche, New York. And that's from John in North Carolina. Both great picks, in my opinion.
I know. We need to talk about one of those at least.
Because this is a question I get from people. Have you picked all of the 15 films? The answer is no.
Wait, people ask you that?
Yeah. I've had a couple of people say, do you know what's coming, like, in the schedule and all that? And honestly, I mean, while Daniel and I are sitting here, we've talked about what the next episode probably is.
Right.
And that's about as far as
we have gotten. A could be cool list.
That's true. We have and there is admittedly about 50 of those. But no, we don't know. So, you know, if you have a director that you want to hear, and we've had other suggestions too. We've had listeners that want to hear about Brad Bird, Baz Luhrmann, James Cameron. These are all great picks, and we want to do them.
Yeah, we want to do them. Should we get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
What's your name, sir?
David Mann.
How do you spell that, please?
M-A-N-N. That's two N's. I'd like to report a truck driver that's been endangering my life.
Looking at the freshman film of none other than Steven Spielberg.
We're going to the desert.
That's right, for...
Duel.
A made-for-TV movie, originally.
Yep, it was. And it was originally shorter, 74 minutes.
Yeah.
Then he extended it to 90 minutes.
So, and you can probably do it in a sentence, but would you mind summarizing Duel for our audience,
Dana? Absolutely. So we have David Mann, played by Dennis Weaver, who's a businessman, and he goes out of the city going to meet someone for business. And as he goes into the desert on his way, he comes across a trucker, and he wants to get across and buy the trucker, so he passes the trucker. And then really from there, a duel ensues between the trucker and David Mann until really one of them's got to go.
Yeah, and you find out, of course, that he's in a fight for his very life.
That's what the film is about.
Interesting to me, because you look at like freshman films, that they're often, I think it's safe to say, passion projects. They're clearly about either subject matter or a storyline that the director in question was like, well, I have to make this. I think it's kind of funny that Steven Spielberg, arguably the most famous and influential director of all time, his freshman film was about road rage.
Road rage. Do you have a road rage story?
Oh, I've got too many.
I mean, I think about a road rage story that I have.
Go ahead.
It's not technically road rage, but it's something that happened on the 14 freeway, which is a freeway David Mann is actually traveling on.
No kidding.
At some point.
And you were on it.
I was on it. Well, here's the thing. A lot of Duel was filmed near where I grew up.
Wow.
Yeah. So on the 14 freeway, I'm driving home. I think it was in college. It was dark. There was a car next to me with some guys in it. It's college guys, probably my age. And I'm driving. And it's like the two of us on the road. All of a sudden, I turn to my left and I see that they're mooning me.
Yeah.
Just two bare asses on the window, just mooning me.
Yeah.
They were driving in front of me, cutting me off, pulling back, doing that over and over and over again. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I just rolled down my window and I just gave them a thumbs up. I just gave them a thumbs up and I started blowing kisses at them. And they got freaked out and they pulled up their pants and they just drove away. It's the weirdest thing. That's my Duel.
That's great, man. That's a great story. You know what? It's funny you say that because I had something similar, and I found out that the best way to deal with someone just being crazy and, you know, trying to run you off is to pull out your phone and point it at them.
Wait, like if you're taking a video?
Yeah, but you don't even have to actually take the video. As long as you're pointing it at them, they
freak out.
Yeah, they don't want to deal with you anymore.
That's good to know.
So anyway, if you want to squelch road rage, which actually is a great bridge back to Duel, because this movie was a 1971 movie, and it's the kind of movie, and I love this. I love movies that are so of their time that any other decade or they wouldn't work.
Right.
And Duel is definitely that, because a road rage story today, there's cell phones and I don't know. I mean, I don't want to sound like an old codger. There's so much violence that it would escalate so much earlier and in such a crazier way, I feel like, if the movie were made today. You can't really make that movie now.
You can't. And there are so many elements, I think, to the film that requires David to get out of the car that don't exist now.
Do you remember, this is an old film, where were you when you first saw Duel?
So I saw it on television, actually, and I was in Lancaster, and I watched a lot of TV. I was watching television. It came on. It was one of those films. I actually don't know why I would have kept watching. I was probably 9 or 10 at the time. But it held my attention. Probably. And I think the reason it held my attention is because I wanted to find out who it was that was driving the truck.
Yeah.
And then I hadn't seen it until watching it again in preparation for this.
Yeah. So you would see like landmarks and stuff and recognize
it. Oh, absolutely. I'd see landmarks. I'd see the streets and well, the street, I guess, and the main highway that he's driving on. And I think part of it, I wasn't necessarily afraid, is because growing up where I grew up in that area, it was probably be one of my family members that was driving the truck. I don't think my family members would necessarily relate to the Dennis Weaver character, to David Mann. This was shot mostly in the like Acton, Santa Clarita area roads I drove down. But yeah, desert.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I was.
For me, I first saw the film a week ago. So
this is your first time?
Yeah, first time. I went in cold. I've seen, well, like most of us, I've seen most of Spielberg's movies, the vast majority, but right. I never made it back quite that far. Before this, the earliest Spielberg movie I'd seen was Jaws. So it was really interesting. And this kind of bridges into the next topic, which is what makes this film a Spielberg film.
Right.
A lot, actually, this early. And that's what was sort of surprising to me, that, you know, Spielberg, of course, had been employed as a television director.
What were some of the things he... I know, I can't remember.
He did a Columbo. He did a couple of night galleries. He was kind of... I think he felt like he was just sort of slumming it in television for as long as he had to, because his ambition was always to be a theatrical film director, but...
He knew what he wanted. He wanted to be a feature film director.
Yeah.
And so this was his way in, and he kind of felt he knew that.
I mean, I don't know if he knew that or not. I think he just thought, well, this is where I can get some work. And he even describes the fact that even that was tough, because all the television directing jobs were going to the, the old workhorses who were there for the birth of television a couple decades earlier.
And he's young at this point.
Yeah, I think he was in his early 20s.
That's crazy. And this was based on a short story.
Right.
By Richard Matheson.
by Richard Matheson, and Richard Matheson had tried to get that made as a film a couple of times, and it was just so, and you can understand why he would have a hard time getting it made, because it's like, what is this? It's not an idea for a movie. It's an idea for a part of a movie.
Right. You know, that's a good point. It's true.
But yet Steven Spielberg made a very compelling hour and a half out of just really one situation.
So yeah, let's talk about that. So what about this film then do we see kind of makes a feature film director? Like, how did this set him on his course?
You know, I've seen it written in other places that Duel is one of the most successful television movies ever. I don't know how they're measuring that success, if that's like a Nielsen thing or if that's just the fact that it led to the most successful filmmaking career of all time. But it's just widely regarded as a television movie that feels more than a television movie. And I definitely get that sense from the very first shot.
Right.
That lasts, I mean, how many minutes is that first shot? Like almost 5 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, it's very long. Like the POV shot, right?
The POV.
Yeah. Which I think, I was thinking about that when I was watching it. I'm like, wow, that's really common nowadays. I mean, films are being totally shot that way.
Yeah.
In a POV style. And here's, right from the get-go, 1971, a POV shot.
Any other director during that time who's shooting a TV movie in a couple of weeks, they're going to look at it and they're going to go, okay, all right, we got to show, you know, the guy getting in the car and, you know, saying goodbye to his wife. And, you know, then we're going to have a few different angles. Steven Spielberg says, no, I want to establish right up front that this is not the typical TV movie that you're going to see. I'm going to not show you a single human soul for the first several minutes of it. I'm not going to have any dialogue for the first several minutes. I'm just going to have you listening to what's on the car radio, and right. I'm going to fix the camera to the bumper. And that's it. That's all you get for a while. And for some reason, it draws you in. It puts you in the mood of you're a guy on the road.
A new muffler, a new shock absorbers.
So the other thing that made me really happy, Duel was the first appearance of the Spielberg Wonner.
Which I've heard about.
So for those who don't know what a Wonner is, it's a shot that, first of all, lasts for a long time and usually takes you through at least a couple of different environments, mm-hmm. but it's a shot in which the camera never cuts. It's hard to do in filmmaking. There's some really famous Wonners. Really, the master of the Wonner is and will probably always be Steven Spielberg. He puts a Wonner, at least one, and I think most of his films. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a really great, another Every Frame of Painting YouTube video about specifically the Spielberg Wonner.
Oh, okay.
Encourage anyone to check it out, but you just see, like, in Jaws, for example, the big Wonner shot is the one where the town council people are arguing about what to do about this problem of the shark, and, you know, they walk out to a dock and they get out a boat and they take the boat out to a whole other environment. It's all one shot, and it's amazing. Yeah. When you really look at it from a technical level, it's like how many different environments and how perfectly timed and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, in Duel, the Wonner is, of course, David Mann. He's just had his first violent encounter.
He crashes into the fence.
He goes into the cafe, and he shows up at the door, and that's when the shot begins. And we follow him into the cafe. The guy tells him where the bathrooms are. He goes, he washes his face. He has a whole inner monologue. He comes back out of the bathroom. He goes to find a table. And just as he's about to sit down at the table, he looks and he sees the truck.
Which wasn't there.
Which wasn't there
before. It drove by, right? It passed him.
Yeah, yeah. And what's so critical about it, it's so critical that shot is a Wonner, because it adds to the holy crap aspect to it, because the truck wasn't there and now it is. But the fact that it's a Wonner, it gives a sense of reality to it. You can't editing choice your way around that happening. The truck wasn't there and now it is. And since it was all done in one shot, that meant that there was stuff going on outside our view that we weren't aware of, and we have to grapple with it.
Yeah, and here's the thing about that shot that really connected me with the David Mann character is you go through this turmoil, he crashes into that fence, he's talking to these old guys, and you can tell he's kind of annoyed because he just wants to get into the restaurant. He gets in the restaurant, And through his journey from the restaurant and with the oneer all the way to that seat is you actually do relax as he might relax.
Mm.
As you walk into the bathroom, he just needs water. You can sense, okay, this is his moment of kind of relief.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ramps up again.
Yeah.
Which is, and you become David Mann in that sense of relaxing and then all of a sudden tense, because as he turns around and it cuts the first time, everyone's asking the same question. The viewer, David Mann, okay, who is it?
Right.
It's so great.
It's perfect. And I love the fact that Spielberg takes his time. I think he actually chose a perfect film for his first film, because the fact that it's such a simple story gives Spielberg time. Spielberg mentioned the fact that when he was making Duel, he always had the voice of Alfred Hitchcock in his head.
What I learned from Hitchcock was don't ever let the audience off the hook. Be a whore about keeping the audience on tenterhooks as long as possible before giving them some clue or some kind of relief. And so if Hitchcock was ever whispering over my shoulder during the making of Duel, it was simply that. Don't answer these questions just because ABC has airtime problems and you've got an air date. Take your time and draw out the suspense as long as possible.
He's like, how much can I draw this out and how much can I make my audience feel like David Mann going, who the hell is it? It's one of these guys. Who the hell is it?
Did you rewind it at all to see if you could tell the boots who it was?
I didn't rewind it, but you know, but he does a great job in like each guy that you look at, you go, oh yeah, that's him.
I did.
You did?
I did. I wanted to know if I could see who it was. I can't. I mean, it's so, yeah. And then that's the whole point of it. But I'm like, I want to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one thing that you said that it makes a lot of sense to me is the whole idea of, and he took Hitchcock's words to heart for the rest of his career. And that's one of the things that we see in Duel, that we see all throughout his work, is you are part of the experience. Spielberg does not let you off the hook. You become part of the movie. We see that right off the bat with his first film.
And I think part of it is because he took an experience that's so relatable. Anyone who has a driver's license knows what road rage is, but what it feels like.
Right.
We've all felt that.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that frustration grow, and it's rage and it's fear, and you know, your brain is cycling through all these different scenarios, and you're like, okay, what can I do that's still kind of legal?
Right, absolutely. Yeah,
to take care of this.
One of the things that I was excited to see in this film that you see later on in other films, in particular, I think the Indiana Jones films, are the chase scenes. I mean, right from the beginning, as he's taking the camera, which I thought was also fascinating, how the camera stays most of the time at the level of the car. And so the camera is going across the truck, and it's constantly moving back and forth between the driver, David Mann's character, the truck, and it's just this battle, really, this duel that's going on, that I was quickly reminded of Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Just that scene when Indiana Jones, you know, is trying to take over the truck, trying to get the Ark, trying to drive it away. I just was brought back to that moment.
I love that you're seeing those parallels, because I was looking at parallels, but from completely different movie. I see Duel as part one of what I mentally refer to as Spielberg's Predator trilogy.
Yes, that's good. No, absolutely. Man versus monster.
Man versus monster, and in the first his first movie, it was man versus a truck. His next was, of course, man versus a shark.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, we have a man versus a dinosaur.
Yep.
And, well, okay, yeah, so there's two man versus dinosaur, but one really good one.
Right, no.
You can see in Jaws, which is, by the way, one of my favorite movies, it's a near flawless film. It's just so beautiful. Duel was training grounds for that movie. You've heard the stories, I'm sure, about Jaws and what a problematic production
yes.
that was. The shark wouldn't work and all that kind of stuff. And so Spielberg was forced to make all these different concessions and change his game plan and say, okay, well, and the way he changed the game plan essentially was to say, you know, let's just see less of the shark, I guess. We'll just hide the shark and try and do it with reaction shots. And well,
wait, that was.
Yeah. And what ended up happening was, it's the gold standard for the term happy accident, because
Wow. That
was how the movie became the powerful blockbuster it was, because the shark kept screwing up. So that's why we never
really
see
it. That's crazy, and that's why the tension's there.
The tension is there, but to me, it's almost hard to imagine that, because he does something so similar. I mean, obviously, we're seeing the truck all through Duel, but we never see the driver. We see his hand. We see part of his boot, you know, when he's walking out. But that was a very, very intentional choice on Spielberg's part. In fact, he even said later he didn't want at any point for the movie to feel like it was the driver that had it out for David Mann. He said he wanted it to feel like it was the truck itself that had it out for him. I felt that.
I did too. And I read also that he wanted a truck that looked in some ways beast-like. I mean, he picked this truck because it looked like it had a face in the front.
Yeah, the Peterbilt, yeah.
Yeah. I guess, well, yeah, here's a question then with regard to that and what you're talking about with Jaws and the Predator trilogy, because this is a question I ask when I'm watching films. What is Spielberg getting at? Is he trying to say anything with regard to these films, man versus monster? I mean, what is he doing with that theme?
That's a good question. When Matheson wrote the original treatment and the original story, even the fact that he was naming him Man,
right,
there was significance to that. I mean, yeah, sure, that's pretty on the nose. And, you know, he had aspirations for making it a story about mankind and, you know, class struggles and all that. I'm not getting personally that out of it,
right,
but I don't know that I have an answer for it, because Spielberg is definitely a message director.
That's what it seems like.
So what's his message for Duel? What do you think?
I mean, I don't know if there's this particular message, but I do think that it's fascinating that you have this character named Man, which was a choice of Matheson's, not necessarily his. But you do have this man who comes up upon these insurmountable circumstances and really needs to figure out who he's going to be and what he's going to do. And I think a lot of Spielberg's films, I don't know if they deal with that theme specifically, though I think you could pull that through, but he deals a lot with men and their involvement in the world, in particular their involvement with these external circumstances that they have no control over. And it really they begin to find themselves, or other people begin to realize who they are in response to how they interact with the world around them.
Yeah, he has early on in the film, he goes in to the service station and he calls his wife. I mean, it's kind of a funny conversation,
right,
in a way, but it's an important conversation, I think, because it accomplishes two major things. The first is he mentions to her that he has an appointment coming up. It's not only important that he get to it, but it's important that he's not late. So there, right there, we've got
right,
automatic tension. And second, there's this strange exchange.
I'm sorry about last night.
Oh, I really don't even want to talk about it.
Well, don't you think maybe we ought to?
No, because if we talk about it, we'll just get into a fight, and you wouldn't want that, would you?
You think that I should go out and call Steve Henderson up and challenge him to a fist fight or something?
I mean, I think you could have at least said something to the man last night. I mean, after all, he's practically trying to rape me in front of that whole party.
Oh, come on, honey.
Just forget it. You gonna be home by 6:30?
If Forbes lets me go in time.
But now we know something about David Mann. We know that he's an ineffectual man.
He lacks a lot of agency.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating, because that comes into play later on with the bus, where he has this car that in a sense is really useless to what the bus needs. Like, right, the bus is stuck with all these children. They ask him if he can give them a push to maybe help them start. He's freaked out because he's afraid his car is going to get scratched or it's going to get caught underneath the bumper. But he gives it a try, and he can't. It seems very impotent.
Exactly.
At that moment,
that's the perfect word.
And I think that really does play into who his character is, especially in this moment where he, in many ways, lacks agency, is very impotent, and is called upon to do something that he doesn't necessarily feel like he's able to do or wants to do, and really wants to avoid altogether. But then, as we know throughout the film, he's forced to face it head on.
But there is a moment. There is a moment.
Oh, and then, yes. I love that moment.
The moment, and it is, yeah, you want to stand up when that moment comes. when he is, I mean, let's be honest, it's been an hour of and 15 minutes of getting fucked with.
Right.
That's what the movie is.
Totally.
And then there's a moment and it crosses his face and you can see it. You don't need music. You don't need anything. You see it cross his face and he says, no, this is me playing the game now. This is no longer a game that's being played on me. He comes up with this plan, which is very flawed and very risky. It's the iffiest plan anyone has ever come
up with. Absolutely.
But man, oh man, he says, forget it though.
I'm
going to give it a shot and this is done.
Yeah, and I think that around the time when he does that, there is something that I see in Spielberg films, and I want to bring up, and I think this is a perfect place to bring it up, is when he uses that shot, like the crane shot, into David Mann's face, and you see in this moment before he's going to get into the car, and he's going to try, and he's going to say, no, I'm going to pass this son of a bitch, and I'm going to beat him on the grade, but that face... And there's the Spielberg face that I think is all throughout his films. And it was to such beautiful perfection here where you can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, and to his credit, really, because I don't think I'm saying anything too controversial when I say Dennis Weaver, decent actor. You're not going to get an award-winning performance out of Dennis Weaver, in my opinion.
No, absolutely.
He did fine in this, but man, oh man... Steven Spielberg played those moments to every strength that Dennis Weaver has and then some.
Oh, so good. I love that moment. Just that moment. And the Spielberg face where, and that's a question I had for you, is what is it about the face and what he's doing with the camera when he zooms in, which you see in the reveals and when you basically are seeing on the character's face something you don't even know yet. Right? But you see what they see, or no, you see them seeing what you're about to see. And so it actually teaches you, well, this is how I feel, it teaches you how to experience what you're about to see. But what about the face is Spielberg so interested in? I suppose is my question.
I guess this is just one of the hallmarks of Spielberg, is he thinks naturalism is more valuable than theatrics. Which is almost funny to say.
I was about to say, I elaborate on that.
Well, I remember hearing about when he was doing location scouting for E.T. Maybe you've heard some of the same stories
I think I have.
He didn't want to build a set and he didn't want to build a home for the family where the E.T. story takes place. He wanted to use a real home and he went in and he gave them specific instructions when he went over to scout. He said, do not clean up before I come over. And they're like, well, you know, he's a big, and he said, no, don't clean up. And he went over there and he saw families don't live the same way when they have company over as when they don't have company over. And that's just true across the board. So he came over and, you know, there's dishes and there's books and magazines and there's, you know, whatever. And there's a floor that wasn't swept. And he said, this is the house that it needs to happen in.
He knew it.
He knew it. And he said, and you can see it in some of the performances in Duel even. I mean, there's a moment when David Mann is trying to convince the older couple, look, I need your help.
Yeah, you see that truck?
Mr. Weed, don't want any trouble.
No, there won't be any trouble. I'm asking you to do is just call the police.
We gotta go. Was there an
accident? Ma'am, all I'm asking you to do is just to make a phone call.
Jim, step on the
pedal. My life's in danger. Can't you make a lousy phone call to the lousy police for me?
There's a naturalism, though, to that conversation. Right. They're kind of talking over each other, and there's like, you know, those sorts of things. And so you get these expressions on these faces that are legitimate rather than... I don't know, over-directed and those kinds of things. That's what I don't know if that's what you're driving at, but that's what I see in a Spielberg film.
No, absolutely. I think that's exactly what I'm getting at.
So you go up to anyone on the street and you say, name a director. 4 out of 5 times, the person is going to say Steven Spielberg. People that don't know anything about film, they don't know directors, they know Steven Spielberg. He occupies that space in culture. He has this brand that's sort of universally thought of as a good brand. It's a quality product. It's funny because, like, you know, you can go to someone. So, you know, what's your favorite Coen Brothers film? Mm-hmm. Most people, if they're not film people, are going to go, oh, I've heard that. Remind me what a Coen Brothers film. When you say, what's your favorite Steven Spielberg film? People don't need to think about it. They're like, oh, well, Schindler's List or Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
or,
they know. They know a Spielberg film.
They know. They know what Spielberg did. Typically, what we do in this podcast is we talk about, well, what was your first experience with this particular film? When did you first see it? But I'm curious to know, what was your first experience with Steven Spielberg?
It would have to be, I mean, I don't know when I saw it. I remember knowing that it was a Spielberg film, was E.T. That was it. I remember watching it and rewatching it with family, with my dad, and knowing and learning then, okay, yeah, that's a Steven Spielberg film. And then I'd have to say later on, when it be another event came up as a Spielberg film, even though I'd seen some in between, was Jurassic Park. But E.T. certainly was the first.
Yeah.
What about for you?
For me, the what's your first Spielberg experience and what's your first Spielberg film are almost two different questions. Because honestly, I don't know what my first Spielberg film was, because it was either, because I know I saw them both at around the same time, probably within a matter of a couple months of each other, which was Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T. Yeah, they came out back-to-back years. Raiders of the Lost Ark was 81 and E.T. was 82.
That's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing, those two films, back-to-back.
Back-to-back. So he was probably doing pre-production on one as he was doing post-production on the other. But I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark for the first time on TV. I think it was probably a free HBO weekend or something like that in our house. I saw E.T. for the first time in the theater. So again, probably around the same time. I mean, first of all, I loved Raiders of the Lost Ark. I was so pumped.
Yeah.
I just loved it. I was young enough to be scared by the guy's face melting off at the end, but
by the very presence of God.
That's right. All you got to do is just open that ark up and that's how it works. Your face blows off. E.T., though, I was 7 or 8,
I guess. And you saw it in the theater.
Or no, younger. I was 6 or 7. And I saw it in the theater. And I remember I guess I had to have been 6 years old. You know, you have a certain emotional language and range. Most of the stuff that I watched made me happy. Mm-hmm. And I also knew that there were movies that could make you sad and shows that could make you sad and make you angry or something. And I could sort of get a hold of that, but I remember sitting in the theater and watching E.T. and feeling something like, this is new. This is new territory. I'm happy and I'm sad and I'm upset. And I also am inspired. And there were all these things layered on top of each other in the same moments, in the same sort of entertainment space. And that felt so wild to me.
That is wild.
I hadn't really considered that feelings could be that complex. And sitting there and watching Elliot stand over E.T. and thinking, I want him to live, but I don't want him to live. Mm-hmm. And I want him to stay here on Earth with Elliot, but I want him to go home. I wanted all these contradictory things all at the same time. And I didn't know what to do with that as a 6-year-old. But even that inner conflict I found to be beautiful. Well, that was the first film experience. My first awareness, though, of Spielberg was as a family. This is a couple of years later. We watched E.T. I think it was out on home video or something like that. So we're watching it as a family. Well, there's a moment in the film.
So your mom and dad and your...
My mom and dad.
So the whole family.
The whole family is in there, yes. Yeah. There's a moment in the film when all of the government people, they're taking over the house and they're coming in their hazmats and they're, you know, they're running cables everywhere and they're sealing the place off. And you feel like this family is getting essentially just like suffocated and choked out of their own home.
Right.
And there's a shot where the camera's sort of low and there's a cable that's being pulled taut. It's in the den or the living room or something like that.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
The chair.
Right.
And the cable grabs the chair and it slams the chair against the wall because it's pulled taut. And it's a literal representation of what's figuratively happening to this family. They're being choked. When that happened, that choke, shunk, that chair hits the wall. I still remember, I don't know if it was my mom or my dad, but one of the two of them said, Spielberg.
Wow.
And the other, I don't know if it was my mom or my dad, said, Spielberg.
That's amazing.
And that was the first moment in my life that I had a sense that there was a person behind that was in charge of this experience, right, that I was sitting there looking at. And I remember as a little kid hearing my parents say, Spielberg. And I remember thinking, I think I want to make movies.
Wow. So that's incredible. Are your parents, like, are they film people?
Not at all. No, not even a little bit.
And that says so much about Spielberg, that he can be that type of auteur, which I will argue that he is, that someone who's not necessarily a geek would know. Yeah. Oh, there's a Spielbergian, however you would say that. There's a Spielberg moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can't point to a moment like that and go, "What a cool camera angle!"
Right.
Or even what a great acting job, or what a great piece of dialogue, or what a great. It's none of that. It's just someone made a storytelling decision. I don't know how else to put that into the words other than Spielberg.
Wow. He does. I mean, there's a sense in which he makes you feel. He makes you believe. There it is. He makes you believe. I think in a lot of those films.
Yeah, I've only met one person in my life who dislikes Spielberg.
Why did he ever? I'm assuming it's a he. Maybe it's a she.
No, it was a he, and he had a reason. He was actually it was very strange. He was an artist that I used to work with, very very talented artist. And I remember asking, because he rolled his eyes because I brought up Spielberg. And I was like, come on, he's the one guy that we can all agree is a great art. I mean, he said, it's just kind of syrupy. Everything has to have a happy ending. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess so. And then, he's not wrong in that I don't know of any Spielberg movies that don't at least end on a note of hope.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty common.
But I don't know. What's, I mean, you've got to be pretty bitter and crusty and cynical.
What's the problem with that, right?
I know. It's every frame is gorgeous in a Spielberg film, and I can understand if. I mean, no, he's not my top director personally, but I'm going to go and see a Spielberg film when a Spielberg film comes out. Sure. I mean, that's you know you're going to see a great film.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened when watching Duels. I'm like, I want to go watch so many other Spielberg films right now. Because there is that sense in which, wow, yeah, I just remember all these moments of like Spielberg moments in his films. And I've felt something. I've been in awe. I've felt wonder. And I think that he does that so well in so many of his films and the way that he tells stories.
So in contrast, what does Duel not do very well? Or maybe you could say, what does Duel do that Spielberg probably wouldn't want to do again and maybe didn't do again?
Well, you touched on this earlier, but I do think that there's it's a little on the nose in terms of thematically. And I think that that can be argued that it was the script and it was, maybe Matheson's choice. But I do think that Spielberg made some decisions that kept it on the nose, this theme of man being maybe restricted or emasculated. And the conversation with his wife, I thought, that feels a little silly to me, a little forced. It did serve, it helped us see certain things, but I wish there were other ways that he would have done that. Another thing I didn't know why he did it was that shot in the where people are washing their clothes, that woman opens the door to the dryer and you see the camera shooting through the door and her arm is in the way and you see David Mann. I didn't know why that was there. It seemed like, oh, this is a cool shot.
Yeah, it's just being fancy.
Right, and so I didn't like that. Another thing is I wish the film was more silent than it was. And it's almost a silent film.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought that some of the things that David Mann says when he's driving or the narration that you hear, I found really silly.
I don't know. All I did was pass this stupid rig a couple of times and he goes flying off the deep end. He has to be crazy. Why didn't I leave right away when I saw his truck outside? Then I'd know what he intends to do.
Totally. I think if I had to point to my biggest problem with the film, it's the narration. It doesn't really serve any purpose. It doesn't give you any information that you don't already have. And if anything, it interrupts moments. And in fact, we don't hear that narration until a good 20 minutes, half hour, maybe into the film. And it's during the oneer that we first hear it. And he goes into the bathroom and then all of a sudden it just feels like out of nowhere, suddenly we hear this echoey voice. And I remember trying to look at David Mann's mouth, like, is he talking? Because this doesn't fit.
It's confusing.
Yeah, it is confusing. And I don't think, first of all, I don't think Spielberg would do that again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, he's such a tight filmmaker that there just doesn't seem to be a need. But it surprised me that that was something that was in the script from the very start. Mm-hmm. It just, to me, smacked of, let's add this in later because I feel like people are going to be antsy. And so we need to have them listen to something. But no, apparently it was in the script from the very start. It's the most unneeded part of the movie because yep. It's like, I just want you to let me feel what I'm going to feel during
absolutely.
These
plots. And I actually read the short story.
Wow.
And a lot of that narration is in the short story, which makes sense for a short story because yeah. You can't just see all these things that are happening, right, without any having any visual stimulation. Yeah. And so you kind of hear what the character is thinking, what he's talking about. And he actually thinks a lot more about his family and his wife in this story. And so I felt like why you'd have to pull that over, and maybe that's a lack of understanding of what of the power of film and what can actually be accomplished in the visual image, is by thinking that you would need that. And so that Matheson pulling it over thinks, oh yeah, this is necessary for the audience, when really it becomes unnecessary because of all the things that you're seeing.
What did you think of the short story? I haven't read it.
I thought it was good. I read it after seeing Duel, so it's hard not to be informed by it, and it's hard not to see what I have seen in the film. There are some minor differences, though. It's actually pretty spot on in terms of what Spielberg, or what the script and what Spielberg did.
Follows the same beats.
Yeah, and the ending's actually different.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in terms of how, spoiler alert, in terms of how the truck actually goes over the cliff.
Yeah.
And because in the film, the truck... You know, David Mann puts his briefcase, which, again, maybe a little on the nose. What is that saying? Is this businessman who's going to maybe leave this way of living and, you know, it's going to go down in hell with this driver. But anyway, the car is actually hit by the truck and it goes off the cliff, where in the story, the car is saved. Oh. And it doesn't, it's the truck actually is not able to make a turn in the story and then kind of rolls off the cliff. So I thought that was an interesting difference. I actually liked that the car was dead because it kind of signifies this life that might die.
It feels like he should lose something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Spielberg does a pretty good job throughout Duel of setting up and paying off and setting up and paying off. But he sets up a big one all through the movie. And this goes back to our conversation about Blood Simple, the Chekhov. If a gun is
right,
you know, if we see a gun in the first act, it needs to be fired in the second act. And it made me nuts that he didn't pay it off. And that setup is the big fat word flammable
right
on the back of that truck. Now maybe I'm just, you know, I'm a guy that has been Michael Bay'd to death and whatnot throughout my adult life and film going experiences. But when I saw that thing, I was like, okay, this thing's gonna blow up, and it is gonna be glorious when
it goes over the cliff. You know, you're waiting for it.
You're waiting for it. Yeah, I mean, we've been honestly watching the film feels like, okay, he's behind a truck. Oh, okay, it's flammable. Now he's passing the truck, which is flammable. Now that truck is passing him again, which, by the way, is flammable.
Don't forget.
That's how it feels. Don't forget. It's flammable.
It's going to blow up.
In fact, it even says the word flammable twice on the back of that truck. It just so you know. And man, oh man, when that thing rolled over and it just kind of went clunk at the end. I mean, it was a great shot and all, but where is my big explosion? Again, maybe it wasn't a big deal for audiences of the 70s who weren't used to as many explosions as we are today, but... Man, did I want to see that thing blow up.
You think it's a money issue?
I guess it had to have been. And by the way, they only had one truck.
Oh, yo. Wow. So yeah. They need to commit to that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was it, man. And this thing was as shoestring as you can imagine. Would Spielberg blow up the truck? I think he would have blown up the truck today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he would have blown up the truck.
Yeah, he would have had a fleet of 30 of them, but...
But the noise that the truck makes when it goes off the cliff, almost like this roar of some sort of creature or monster.
You heard that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost like it's the a sentient thing.
Yeah. And then this is maybe another pet peeve. I don't know what David Mann is doing after he sees the truck go down. This little dance and this noise that he makes. I'm like, what? Why did you do that?
Do you know, though, that moment Spielberg mentioned is he had that moment in mind when he cast Dennis Weaver?
Really?
It's true. The studio or, you know, the network or whoever it is that hires Steven Spielberg to do a TV movie just gave him different options for casting, you know, and one of them was Dennis Weaver. Mm-hmm. Well, he immediately got excited about the idea of Dennis Weaver. At that point, Dennis Weaver was probably, and I'm sure will always be, best known for his role in Gunsmoke. Well, that wasn't what Steven Spielberg was excited about. Okay. He was excited about Touch of Evil, which is an Orson Welles
film.
Right,
yeah, okay.
Well, Dennis Weaver played this sort of, you know, nervous, manic, reactive guy who's, you know, just kind of like flailed around and all this kind of stuff. And he even had in mind, he's like, when that truck goes over the side, I want him dancing around and flailing around like a maniac. And I've seen Touch of Evil, so I know Dennis Weaver can do it.
Oh my gosh.
So he did it.
All right. Well, okay.
What are you going to say, man?
I'm not going to. It's not my favorite moment, but hey, it's all right.
It's a little much, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a few moments. There are a few moments. His voice kind of got to me at some points, which is why I say I was wishing it was more of a silent film. But
yeah,
all that aside, that's not Spielberg's fault. We'll blame that on Weaver.
No, but I think it's safe to say that Spielberg has his direction with actors. He's definitely perfected his craft over the decades. It helps that he, for basically every movie, he gets the best actors in the business.
Right.
But I think that's part of it, is he allows his actors to feel out the moment. I mean, I think we've all heard the story of Saving Private Ryan, mm-hmm. where Tom Hanks had very strong feelings about how to play his role. Spielberg said, you know, this is what I want to see. And Tom Hanks said, I know that would make for a great scene, for a great shot, but I'm not feeling it. I'm feeling this, which is probably not as great of a shot and as great of a scene. And Spielberg said, you know what? I'm going to trust my actor. And I think that he's kind of known for that. He's known for trusting his actors to embody the character. I guess essentially siding with character more than siding with this would be such a cool shot or such a cool moment or something. He wants authenticity.
Which is great. And that's a good thing to know, because you get that in his films where there is a sense in which he respects humanity. And I love that there is a sense of humanity in his films. And maybe you don't see it so much in Duel because of the story, but in a lot of the stories, that's a really big deal for him.
Yeah. You have any favorite and least favorite Spielberg?
One of my favorite Spielberg movies is Minority Report.
Yeah.
I love that film. And I've probably seen it more than any other Spielberg movie. You just could watch it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Least favorite, probably Lost World.
Yeah.
I don't think I like that film that much. But
it wasn't too hot.
Yeah. What about you?
Those are both tough questions. I think favorite, it's hard to beat Saving Private Ryan. It's just such a powerful movie, a movie that I had mixed feelings about when I first saw it.
And why?
I think because I wasn't prepared for it. I was prepared for, it's going to be great, and it's going to be expensive, and Tom Hanks is great. And then I saw it, and it just shook me. It was disturbing. Mm. I still hadn't recovered from the first scene when the movie was over. Obviously, that can be the hallmark of great filmmaking, and it was in that case. But I just, you know, it took me a while to kind of warm to the whole package because of that. But looking at it now, it's just, you know, I don't know. It's pretty tough to beat Saving Private Ryan. I don't think as much of Schindler's List as most people do.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why it's an important film. I'm always wary when people tell me something is important. Right. A film is important, though, because when I hear important film, I think, oh, so people are getting tortured, mm-hmm. tortured and abused. That's what that means. I mean, I hate to be such a cynical git, but
that's what when you hear that, you're like, okay, that's what I'm going to see.
Yeah, I'm going to see someone either getting tortured or abused in some way, and like in a very, very dramatic way. And hey, man, I mean, I agree. Schindler's List is a film that people need to see once. And I think it's good that it was made. But to me, it's in that same category as 12 Years a Slave, mm-hmm. Even The Passion of the Christ. I think these are important films that people should see, but I don't want to see them again. I saw it. I don't need it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Least favorite film, I think it's... For me, it's not really a contest. It's got to be that fourth Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Man, oh man.
I actually didn't see it, so.
Oh, dude.
Should I? just so that that can be my least favorite.
I mean, that's the definition of completists only.
Going back to the Saving Private Ryan in that first shot reminded me of something with regard to Duel that I find interesting, is how he uses so many different elements in his films to create an experience or a moment. I mean, in Saving Private Ryan, you have the thing that I remember most about that scene is the sound of bullets going through the air and hitting bodies.
Right.
And I think, and so that with, along with the filmmaking, you know, there's something about it that feels a little too real or yeah. just very real. And I think about that with Duel.
Yeah.
You have all of these elements with the camera and the sound and just creating this experience where you're there and you're in it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I don't know if you heard the story about when Spielberg was testing weaponry for Saving Private Ryan. Just got so many great Spielberg stories.
This is great. Where do you get all of them?
I don't know. How did the story go? So he, you know, he obviously he's got the greatest, he's got ILM and he's got all the greatest sound designers and visual effects artists in the world working on these films, and Saving Private Ryan was no different. And he hired these sound designers to mimic the sounds of World War II,
wow.
storming the beach of Normandy. And he's, you
that
know,
was their job.
That was their job, to mimic these sounds. Well, he brought in veterans and he sat them in the, you know, in the sound studio, and he said, "I'm going to play some sounds for you and tell me if this was Normandy."
It's amazing.
So they sat down and they played it, all the, you know, cacophony of things that these guys had built. And he got to the end and he said, "What do you think?" And they all said, "Yeah, I mean, yeah, that sounds right. You know, it's been so long, it's hard to remember, but it sounds right." And he said, "Okay." And he left going, "It's not really what I was wanting." So he went and purchased parts of the actual Nazi weapons, and he had them reassembled.
No way.
Yeah, he had them reassembled, and he started firing them off. You know, and they have this very unique sound, this ga 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 ga, you know, that sound. And, you know, they captured the sound, and he brought the same veterans back in, and he said, "I'm going to play something for you again. Tell me if this is mm-hmm. it." They played the, you know, the sound design, and they didn't say anything. And he said, "I mean, are we close?" And they said, "That's it. We got to go." And they had to leave. It was too much for them. They couldn't be there anymore. They heard the sound, and it was the sound.
That's incredible.
Of bullets coming down on them. 50
and they couldn't
years
take
early.
It anymore.
They couldn't take it. They had to go.
So I love that story because it testifies to the fact that Spielberg isn't just trying to make something that he thinks will be good or work. He's actually wanting a specific response from people in the audience, and he knows what he wants,
yeah.
which I think is that's something that goes, that's an undervalue in terms of what an artist, right?
Yeah.
And it's not just about his vision and what he wants and he's going to make it and screw everyone else. Mm-hmm. No, he wants people to feel a certain way,
yeah.
to experience it a certain way. And that's a lot of humility. And yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, I think it's very commendable that he makes a movie like that, and he says, "Yeah, I want it to be good and all that, but if I can't reach those guys, I don't feel like I know what I'm doing." But that comes across, to a kid who was born in the 70s and has no idea what
right.
Normandy was or what that's like, you know. But that's still coming through to me. So, Duel. And this is Spielberg's made a lot of movies. Where does Duel rank?
I don't have a number for this one, Jeremy.
Dude, come on, you spoiled me.
I know.
With numbers.
but then you see the IMDb list of his, and you're like, "What? How the hell am I going to do that?"
Yeah.
I don't think it's, I mean, I think it's a great film. I don't think it's in the top half of his films. So I'd put it in, that's as close as I'm going to get to something. It's in the bottom half of his films.
Bottom half, yeah. I mean, I agree. I think that it's not only would I say bottom half, but I would say it's probably in the bottom 5 or 10.
That's fair, yeah.
Entertaining movie, though. You know, as far as, you know, is this a completists only sort of movie? I don't know that I would go that far. I think it still holds up and it's entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
If you say I want to see a Spielberg movie tonight, what should I get? There's a lot of Spielberg movies that are better than Duel.
I wouldn't give you Duel either.
No, but at the same time, I think you should see Duel.
I do too. I think that you can get a lot out of the film, especially knowing his recent or his work, and say, oh, that's where it started. There's a little piece of that in that first film.
The editing is beautiful in Duel. It really is. I mean, it really is a, I don't know if I go so far as to say a marvel, but it is a very impressive editing job. I think that it's, unless you've actually made a film or cut together footage in your life, it's kind of difficult to express how hard it is to tell a story like that and make it coherent. Like when Martin Scorsese was making Raging Bull, mm-hmm. he realized that while he was shooting the boxing sequences, that it's one of the hardest things in the world to shoot right. as a boxing sequence. Your protagonist, your antagonist are there, and they're constantly moving and they're changing positions so fast. And it's hard to shoot it in such a way that's coherent to the audience and still entertaining, you know, because you don't want to just stay wide the mm-hmm. whole time. That's not, you're not in the ring. But at the same time, if you get in the ring, then you lose sense of what's going on. And so, very similar, actually, when you're shooting things like an hour and a half car chase, essentially. Like you lose your kind of balance and your sense of where everything is very easily. But man, Spielberg, he set his cameras in the exact right place. He hit those edits at just the right time. You never, for even half a second, are wondering, wait a second, where am I? What's going on?
Right.
Oh, you're never discombobulated. You always know what's going on, and you're always right there in the moment. That's impressive.
Yeah, I read that they wanted him to shoot this on studio or in a studio, and not. I mean, I couldn't imagine
with rear projection and
what that would be like. I'd rather take this with, and you get a marvel in editing and mm-hmm. get a real feel of how it might be. And yeah, I couldn't even imagine what that would have been like.
If you're thinking about filmmaking, I think it's a great film to watch for aspiring filmmakers, just to see, like, okay, how much can you get out of a story this simple? How much entertainment value? It's impressive. There's no way around it. It's an impressive film. I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah, me too. And I do, so I think it's worth watching.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Freshman 15. Thank you for joining us. Again, Daniel and I are in agreement. One of these days we're going to not be in agreement on something and just the world is going to fall down.
What are we going to do at that point? We're going to drink a lot.
That's probably it. Maybe we should pick our next episode based on something that we know in advance that we feel completely differently. But I don't know. But in this case, we're both in agreement that Duel, while it's not the strongest Steven Spielberg film, it's still a strong film and it's worth your time.
So if you want to reach us to tell us what you think of this episode of the podcast, you can find us in a few different ways. We're on Facebook, Instagram. If you want to send us an email, freshman15film, that's freshman15film@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. If there are any recommendations you have, any films you want us to get to, be sure to let us know.
And before we go, we just want to mention our friends over at Steelcraft, which is a shipping container community of eateries in Long Beach, California.
It's going to be a great place to really for people to come together and eat some good food, drink some good beer, and just enjoy community.
Steelcraft was born of a desire to see people come together over food and drinks. Steelcraft unites local eateries with a communal dining space in Long Beach. Whether you come for the food, the drinks, or the people, there's a place for you at the Steelcraft table. For more information, visit steelcraftlb.com. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Freshman 15. I'm Jeremy Baer.
And I'm Daniel Long.
And we'll talk to you next time.
See you.